When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time today. Whatever it means for you in your club, we'll talk about that later.
My elbows are ashy as hell, man.
Bro, we've started recording.
No, start again.
No, stay in there.
Do you know what that reminded me of? Like the early days of, we'll talk about that later, when I used to start recording when you, man, were talking. Those were the best.
I used to hate it when you did that.
I forgot about that.
Those were the best, I swear. But
Ashy, start again, please.
Now, Ashy Elbows is the name of this podcast episode.
I'm writing that down.
my elbows are ashy as hell. Now, welcome to episode 77 of the We'll Talk About That Later podcast, football podcast. My name is Junior, and I am joined by some illustrious guests. They join me every week. And since she's made a noise, I'll go to her first. Tanya, introduce yourself.
Well, you kind of already done that, you know, to be fair.
That's your name. You can still introduce yourself. You're like podcast touring and
co-host of 75 different podcasts.
Oh, for God's sake, man.
She's got the podcast special enterprise guest on lock.
No, I'm good, man. I'm happy to be here. My team is winning. So, yeah, I'm buzzing. Yeah,
sad times. Abdi?
I hate podcasting now. Because I actually have to watch football, and football is just so annoying. But you've got Chelsea and Tottenham winning every week, and Arsenal, and, you know, it makes me sick.
Yeah,
How are you, Mark?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, oh, Mark.
Listen, don't. But I'm here. I'm emotional, but I'm here.
Don't.
And obviously, I can confirm that my elbows are cream today, so...
My days. All right. I promise for the rest of this podcast, there will be no more mention of elbows. So let's start with the... before we start with any football, just how are you guys? How are you guys? Tanya, does podcast touring tire you out? Or like... Abdi said earlier that you might get insurance on your voice. What's the news on that?
No. I mean, it's been great going on other shows and that. Obviously, you guys are my priority, as I keep saying. But it's been nice. It's been nice to meet different people. I've been busy ranting this week. I started episode one of Tan's Rants on Twitter. So
I saw.
Next episode soon come.
Every single time Tanya tweets something, I send it to Junior and I laugh about it. Like this week, when I saw the voice note, I nearly collapsed dying. And then 2 minutes later, Tottenham scored like 3 goals.
No, I'm telling you, yeah, they played it at half time. I'm convinced. He somehow found it and he played it to them at half time. But I've been good, you know. I've been triggered, though, with Piers Morgan, with this whole Meghan Markle thing, yeah. We won't get into that, but other than that, I've been good.
Thank God this is the podcast where people can escape from that conversation, because I feel like it's been absolutely everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, let's go back to the reason why we have a podcast, even though it's times like these. I woke up this morning and I was like, why did I have the... godforsaken idea to start a podcast about football.
It's your fault, it's wholeheartedly your fault.
I take 100% of the blame. I should be put away. It's absolutely an abomination what I have done here. Sorry, Mark. Sorry, Abdi. Tanya, whatever, innit?
Wait.
Tanya's the only one who's happy.
Yeah, but sooner or later she'll be back running again.
Exactly. Like, it's not gonna last, is it? Let's be honest.
Well, okay, fair. Okay, we're all in the same boat. It's support group vibes again. But Tanya's just a bit more... She needs less support than everyone else.
That's it.
Let's start with the game of the weekend, the Manchester derby. Going into it, Manchester United were facing a lot of criticism for the way they approached big games. Manchester City were on a run about 57 years. They hadn't lost or something like that. I'm not sure of the exact amount of time, but yeah, City were mad favourites. And yeah, Abdi, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I mean, Man United were absolutely disgusting against Palace midweek and just stinking it out, stinking that whole joint. And then Man City, obviously, they were 28 games unbeaten, 20 in a row. Like, they hadn't gone behind since Son scored against Man City back in November. The only team that actually were ahead against them in that run was in the FA Cup, it was Cheltenham.
Yeah.
And then they just slaughtered them later on after that as well. So they looked really imperious as well. And I mentioned to Junior as well, midweek when they were playing Wolves, when they got to 1-1, it was actually scary the way they shifted up a gear. And then boom. And then I went away for a bit and I came back and it was like, what, 4-1? And I was like, oh, this is scary. So, on the game... Mate, the thing is, like, you can't give Man United penalties. Obviously, De Bruyne is he's got a high conversion rate, especially the penalties. You
De Bruyne
always see him as well.
I said Bruno. Oh,
but second
Bruno
is what I meant. Second time you said De Bruyne.
No, I definitely said Bruno. You just didn't hear me.
Okay.
And then Gabriel Jesus as well, man. What an idiot! How can you foul someone three times? Like, he pulled it back on the shoulder. He stepped on his toe and he kicked him in the calf. He's just like, if just giving the referee no choice. But it was interesting the way the game went. You know, Man United, obviously, they know what they're going to do, especially against Guardiola away from home. They've done it many times. They're going to play on the counter attack. It was interesting watching the fact that they played a high line, and which is dangerous against Man City because they've got good off the ball movers like Sterling and Gundogan, so they can get into a box and score goals. So high line is dangerous, but it ended up working because they were very compact in the middle. And Man City, you know, where they like to overload the play, especially with both fullbacks coming inside. You've got Gundogan and KDB and Rodri in the middle, so it almost becomes a five in midfield at times against. And then it was literally just at times, especially when Man City got into a final third, it was just Bruno and McTominay and Fred. So it was interesting that Man United decided to go with that tactic. I felt Guardiola, what he did wrong was he persisted with this Sterling against Wan-Bissaka thing. And we all know Sterling against Wan-Bissaka, Sterling never scored against Man United as it is, but against Wan-Bissaka, he's not going to get any joy because Wan-Bissaka is a guy who likes going against someone 1v1. And Sterling, he's always going to back himself 1v1 as well against anyone, even if he doesn't get any joy, he's still going to keep going. So it was an interesting battle. And they always go, oh, I love the battle between Sterling and Wan-Bissaka, but it's very one-sided. Wan-Bissaka is always going to win that battle because if Sterling tries to like dribble through many players, Wan-Bissaka, you know, he's got them spider legs. He'll get the ball somehow, isn't it? But I thought what he should have done was put Sterling on the right and bring in Foden and sort of do what they used to do with Sané on the left and Sterling on the right. Foden, he's someone who likes going 1v1 and he's got good agility. He's got good body movement and he can go in between challenges. So if Wan-Bissaka is a guy who's always going to go into a challenge 1v1, Foden's a good way to get away from that because Foden can go inside and outside. Whereas Sterling, he's an off-the-ball movement and historically, he just doesn't have a good record against Wan-Bissaka. So I thought he should have done that. Another thing that I'm going to go back to my agenda. Man City were flying when it was Foden, Gundogan, Bernardo Silva, Rodri, Sterling, all of these guys. As soon as you bring in these two clowns, Jesus and Kevin De Bruyne, Man City just lose their rhythm again. Kevin De Bruyne was on these same stupid...
I can't lie. He was so dead again in that game.
He continued just doing the same thing. And Slabhead and what's his name?
Lindelof.
They love that. If you're just going to spam crosses into the box, then they're just going to keep heading the ball away.
Yeah.
And then there was in his defence, there were times where he looked like he was going to shoot and then someone like Zinchenko would just take the ball off his foot and Cancelo was just taking the ball off his foot. So it was too congested. Man City needed to, widen the pitch a bit more and try and test the fullbacks a bit more. Mahrez was doing that. Mahrez, he sat down short a couple of times in the first half, which I thought was quite good. But I got to give it to Man United. You know, the counter-attack, the way they did it as well, like it was. I was very impressed with the way Martial was holding the ball up. Rashford was a threat, even though his decision-making wasn't the best. Bruno, I must say, Man United's midfield three, Bruno, Fred and McTominay, they got to be the most deluded midfield three I've ever seen. Like, McTominay, in his head, he thinks he's Pirlo. Fred, in his head, he thinks he's Yaya Toure with his trampoline first touch. It's a miracle he hasn't broken his leg, man. The way he slides in challenges after he trying to catch up with his first touch. And I don't know who this Bruno Fernandes guy thinks he is. He is the counter-attack killer. Every single time there's a promising counter-attack from Man United, there's a poor pass somewhere. So in that regard, but I have to give it to the fullbacks. Wan-Bissaka, excellent again. Sterling got nothing down the left-hand side. And Luke Shaw, man, even the first half, he was a bit shaky. But in the second half, fantastic. He was Man United's biggest threat going forward as well. The way he drove forward and carried the ball, especially for the goal as well. And I've got to give it to him as well. He was really good against Palace midweek as well. So,
but also, great finish for the goal.
Finish. I love the way as well. The way, who was it? Henderson was the one with the hoof.
Yeah, the throw out.
First touch from Shaw completely does Cancelo in. Goes on the inside. KDB can't keep up. Rodri can't keep up. And there's a space down the middle as well. And he just looked like the Shaw of old. The one who's really, really like a fast attacking left back. What would you guys think as well?
I think it goes to show that you made a point a second ago about Wan-Bissaka and Shaw having such a good game. I think it just goes to show just how important fullbacks are in this kind of modern world of football. You've got one set of fullbacks, Wan-Bissaka and Shaw, who've had stormers, really good games, and I do you've detailed why really well. And then on the flip side, you've got Cancelo, who dropped his first stink bomb in a long time, I have to say. Mm-hmm. He got subbed off after 60 odd minutes. And Zinchenko not impacting the game. So it goes to show your fullbacks winning that battle is a massive part in this modern day era of football. And Man United won it on the day. And obviously, there was a couple of weeks ago, I had a real go at Solskjaer and Man United for not being brave enough in these games. Mm-hmm. And they were. They were braver.
Listen.
And it goes to show that a bit of bravery and faith in your own ideas, faith that you can overcome whatever it is that City will give you and then go and give them back more, that faith there is what gets you to win against these type of teams. So yeah, it's not good to see United win. I don't like to see United win, but in terms of watching them really take the game to City, it's something different. I haven't seen that against another big six team from them this season.
This lollipop manager, yeah, I'm telling you, he's just got superpowers. I don't care. Like, every time he's on the brink of getting the sack or there's a bit of negativity or his job is on the line, he pulls it out of the bag.
But that's,
I'm not getting carried
perfect.
Away with this, man. Yeah, it is. But I'm not getting carried away because we know Man United, they're probably going to lose their next game. And their fans know that. But to be fair, they haven't been losing a lot recently.
And also, can I say that there's this perception that his job is under threat. That's all media.
Yeah, I don't agree.
That's all media and Twitter, because I think I've seen it somewhere where they trust Ole. They want Ole to take this transition forward. Mm-hmm. So I don't think...
Not all Man United fans, though.
No. I don't mean Man United fans. I mean the board people at Man United.
I think he got public backing from Ed Woodward. It must have just been a couple of weeks ago. So the faith is there. Yeah. But Tanya, I think you're right about the disharmony amongst the fan base. There are a lot who want to see him go.
Crazy.
There are a lot who don't see what he offers. And there are a lot who have a lot of faith in him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll see where that one goes.
I do have two questions for you guys, yeah? The first one is, I mean, I'm going to bring it up, but Abdi has talked about this like previously on other podcasts. Bruno gets a lot of praise, but recently he's been getting a lot of stick for not performing in big games, and there was that interview before the game where he was talking about how people expect Bruno to play like when he did last season, and they say penalties don't count, and then he goes, if penalties don't count, then Man United lost 6-0 to Tottenham, not 6-1. Obviously that's a bit banterous as a statement in of itself, but what do you guys think about that?
Do you know what, with Bruno, Bruno, I feel like this whole thing, he doesn't turn up in top six games. I get it, but let's be honest, the whole team isn't performing. So you can't put that all on Bruno. But I suppose because he is such a brilliant player, there is going to be high expectation there. You want your top players to turn up in these games. But I don't know. I think it's a little bit harsh on him, to be honest. But let's be honest, like the whole goals he scored this season, I say it's only like six from open play. The majority are penalties. And it's I know you've got to be there to score them, but, you know, I think he's a brilliant player.
You make a good point. I think he's a very good player. I can definitely agree with you there. I haven't made up my mind. I still haven't. I think I still need the rest of this season and I need next season as well to really make my mind up about Bruno. I think he is a quality player, definitely. But as you've just said, Tanya, 6 goals from open play for someone who admittedly loves to score goals, there's definitely some drastic improvement that can happen there. Because United are a team who create chances. It's not as if the chances aren't there. I know he's one of the ones who's meant to create those chances too, but he always finds himself in good position. So more from open play for me, but very good player.
I don't even think that for me that's the issue really. I think because he's a high productive player, he's an effective player, he gets goals, and his impact on Man United since he joined has been astronomical. But the issue I have really with him is just some of the crazy things he does, like 40-yard passes that hit people in the crowd when there's no one in the crowd anyway. Like killing counter-attacks. He literally thinks he can do whatever he wants. And especially games like this, like there were times where, especially if you lose the ball against Man City, when you've got 6 or 7 people in a counter-attack, you could easily, you know, end up losing the game because he does that so many times as well. So it's more about just keep calm. Sometimes take time, you know, relax. Not every day I'm going to Steven Gerrard this, bro. Relax. Like, you don't have the minerals for that, young man. And but like he does create chances, he gets assists, and he's scoring goals as well. Like he's third top scorer. I know a lot of them are penalties, but at the end of the day, he's still got a point in the back of the net, innit?
Yeah.
I know plenty of players are terrible penalty takers. You know?
Can I just quickly? Abdi, are you saying that he is a really good player, but he should stop trying to force it in certain situations, or are you saying that he should keep trying it in those certain situations, but actually start to get it right? Like,
now, I find it difficult to... Go on, Gina.
No, I was just going to say, this brings me back to when Bruno signed in January last season. I was telling you about a tweet from a Portuguese reporter who was saying what Man United are going to get. And the Portuguese reporter said exactly what we are talking about now, what Abdi has been saying. That he gets lots of goals and assists, but that's because he's going to shoot from 30, 45 yards out. Whenever he gets the opportunity, he's going to shoot. So he's going to score eventually. And he tries these Hollywood passes all of the time. It's like man's playing FIFA. He just wants to like lob it over someone and get the glorious pass. But
that... I do partly agree, though, that one of my friends, he made the point that he said it's because he's got the freedom in this Man United team. Like Ole has pretty much said to him, this is your team. You got the keys. Do what you want.
But he was doing that at Sporting as well. Like I know,
well, I guess probably
he was the main guy at Sporting. So I see what you're saying.
If he's got the keys at Man United, bro, he's got the whole city of Lisbon, bro. So.
But I have one more question. Yeah, this is still related to Man United. Have we seen the ending of De Gea and the passing of the torch to Henderson? Because he's starting to play more than De Gea is. Because
De Gea's had a kid, no?
Yeah, but at the beginning of the season, that's a fair point. But at the beginning of the season,
they wanted to stay there, boy.
Henderson,
the Man United fans.
Henderson was barely even just playing Europa. So I don't know. Just a question.
Yeah, I think, Abdi's right. The only reason, or maybe not the only reason, but the reason he was in goal against City was because David De Gea's wife was giving birth. But I genuinely think that the answer to your question is probably yes. And it wouldn't surprise me if next season you saw him start to kind of play more league games on top of those Europa League games and cup games. And then the season after, fully established number one, I think. And I think that's probably their plan, and it has been for a while.
All right, let's move on. I need some funeral music, man. So the first game of the weekend, see, and I hate when Arsenal play first game of the weekend because it just ruins my whole weekend. And I'm just like, kind of, what's the point? But Arsenal played Burnley at Turf Moor. And see, I lack words because I've said everything already. And we'll always continue to talk about the same things when the same idiots play. So we talk about David Luiz, we've talked about Socrates, we've talked about Kolasinac, we've talked about Xhaka, we've talked about Lacazette, we've talked about whoever, yeah? And it just never ceases to amaze me that time and time again, it's almost like Tanya, who, when she talks about the centre-backs, you know, they have a good game, and then Tanya goes, yeah, but it's hard to praise them. And you can't, I'm feeling it now. Like, it's hard to...
You feel it.
It's hard to look past Xhaka for having a good game. Abdi said the second half against... what was the game before?
Leicester.
Leicester. Second half against Leicester. Xhaka was... I can't remember the word he said, but Xhaka was great, was excellent against in the second half of Leicester. But that doesn't excuse the fact now that against Burnley... My guy begs for the ball, gets the ball, and he slashes it straight at Wood's hip, and it goes in. That's unexcusable for me.
There is a debate, though, about that.
No, it's not Leno's fault. It's not Leno's fault.
Stop right now.
It's not Leno's fault.
There can be an argument.
No, there's no argument. There's no argument. It's Xhaka.
Let me stop you right there.
It's just Xhaka.
It's just Xhaka.
Let me stop you right there.
I'll tell you that right now.
Let me stop you right there. First and foremost, it was Xhaka who came short anyway.
And he asked.
He was calling for the ball. Yeah, he was.
It was Xhaka. And anyway... You're a professional footballer. What, could you not play it first time with your right
1,000%.
Foot? 1,000%. First time with your right foot. Like, mate.
Couldn't Leno just clear it,
He could have, but this is the way we play.
Yeah, exactly.
We've been playing like this for about 2 years now.
And you can see that Arteta is very like, you will play out from the back. And our first goal, which came from Leno, passing it to Partey, who dribbled past two, and it led to our first goal. So you can't say Leno could have cleared it then as well.
Anything happened in midweek against Liverpool and Chelsea. If you see the way Jorginho played out of the press, it's night and day when you compare it to Xhaka. the way I saw the situation here was Xhaka. He came short, thinking obviously he wants to have the ball as well. If you compare it to any other midfielder in that instinct. There's so many other options as well. Like, you know, when someone's playing out the back here and an attacker anticipates very well. Chris Wood didn't even do that. Chris Wood didn't even want to be hit by the ball. That's an assist by Xhaka. It's the type of that's an assist. Like, he kicked it against him so he could go in the goal. But the issue I have here is not only that issue from Xhaka. I just feel like Arsenal as a team, this is our two biggest issues. One, we have to blow a team away because we're always capable. The tactic against Arsenal is always
stay in the game.
Stay in the game. They'll do something stupid. You'll get a result. Try and stay in the game. If you can't stay in the game, you'll lose. But if you can stay in the game against Arsenal, they will always give you a goal. So we have to work really hard for our goals. Like Junior was saying, we played out the back very well. It was a good dribble from Aubameyang. And it was pretty much a little bit lucky with the finish, but still, like, overall, the goal was quite good.
Very poor from Pope.
But the way teams play against us is... We give you, like, we're very generous. We're like charity. I've messaged you now. I was like, Oxfam FC. That's what we are. The way we just give away goals is so easy. And the second thing as well is, as Junior was saying earlier on about mentioning all these players as well, my biggest issue is you can't keep relying on the unreliable. And that's my biggest gripe with Arteta, is you have players in the team who are prone to mistakes. Every single time David Luiz gets the ball, I know he's decent enough on the ball as a ball playing centre back, but there's always that percentage, you know, that he might give away a goal. The same thing goes for Xhaka. These are guys who are like, they're giving the keys to like the team. They're one of the important parts of the team, and Arteta keeps picking them, but they're always susceptible to making a mistake, and that's what frustrates me as well. You can't keep relying on unreliable players, and he keeps doing that.
Can I ask you both a question, quick? Because I know you'll probably get onto it, but I can't lie. I've seen a lot of things on Twitter, AFTV. Oh. There is a thing amongst Arsenal fans that there's apparently an agenda against you guys when it comes to these refereeing decisions. Do you two honestly believe that?
I don't think there's an agenda. I just think they're just...
They are just rubbish.
Referees across the league are horrific.
They are just rubbish, but the one thing... And again, I'm not saying there's an agenda. It just recently, it just seems to be Arsenal games that these stupid decisions are happening in. Because
I would dispute that and not say just Arsenal.
No. I'm not saying just Arsenal. Like, we've talked about it about
some
other
fans
games.
Are saying that, though.
But I'm saying, and I'm not the people on Twitter saying it's just Arsenal that Arsenal are getting the bad luck of the green. What I'm saying is that recently during Arsenal games, these decisions are happening in Arsenal games.
I think it's just more noticeable to us because we're Arsenal fans.
No, no. What I'm saying is, like, I'm putting a magnifying glass on Arsenal because we're talking about Arsenal now. But we can talk about other games where there've been loads of terrible decisions, and we've talked about it on this podcast. It's not just Arsenal.
No, let's I'm just going by what I've seen. Yeah, go on.
Let's
go on,
get back to the game. But just we had a similar. I'll get back to the game in a sec. We had a similar handball against Chelsea in the week where it's come off Kante's arm, also not as unnatural position as the Burnley player, I've got to admit, but ball struck hand and we didn't get the pen either. But back to the game, so a bit of context for the listeners, it did finish 1-1, and I've got a question for you because you should have won that game. I know you gave away a cheap goal, but you had the chances to win that game. So is it when I'm looking forward to the summer now. You look at the attacking area of your team and it's probably, look at your squad, it's one of the strongest and most stacked. And then you come back to maybe the centre-back position and it's minus Gabriel, the least stacked. Do you now go and look for a finisher or do you rely on Aubameyang?
I think we need another goal for it. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think we need another goal for it as well. Because we can't just keep relying on Aubameyang. Like, you look at teams nowadays, like the top teams now. I say top teams, but specifically Man City and also now Tottenham as well. There's goals through the whole front three. Whereas Arsenal, we've just literally got Aubameyang. I think Pepe could get goals for you here and there. And Saka, he's still got an issue with his finishing. Whereas just looking at the way we're creating chances now as well, like you said, there were lots of chances in that game, especially towards the end as well. Like, I couldn't believe it, like some of the chances we were missing.
So lucky.
But that's the thing as well, like, that's what frustrates me. It's a whole collective thing. Like, if I'm comparing it to early in the season when we played Burnley and we lost at home and we barely created anything, there's a big improvement. Generally, Arsenal are much better than we were back in the beginning of the season. But you have to, every time we drop points now, we have to look at the every game in the context of the season. We've lost 11 times. We've drawn 5 times. We've only won 11 times. We're 10th in the league with 38 points. I have to look at everything in the context of the season. I can't just isolate it game by game. So now we're so far away from any type of European European aspirations. I have to keep looking at it now. So I can say we've improved attacking-wise, but, mate, we're 10th. And I can say, like, we are creating more chances, but... We didn't win against Burnley, did we? We have to put these chances away.
Right,
so.
I got a very quick question for you because I know we've got to move on. This is to both of you. European football or not next season, then? Simple question. Would you prefer just one season to reset out of Europa League and just really attack the league? Or would Europa League be something to look forward to over the summer?
I think, money-wise, we need Europa. Mm-hmm. Otherwise... then no, bun Europa. I hate Europa.
And that question, you saying, will Europa League be something you look forward to?
No.
Mate, I don't look forward to anything.
I hate Europa, man. I think Thursday, you should be out of it.
I didn't mean it obviously like that. Because, listen, either we're going to be in that ourselves next season or we're not. Like, because you could literally ask the same question to me. We will be in that competition next season or quite simply, we might not even be in that one. So I would actually prefer just to sit out for a season and really attack the league.
Yeah.
But
do you know my I was telling Abdi this before the game started against Burnley. My main issue with Arsenal is how passive we start games. I'm not saying we started against Burnley very passive, but it takes 70 minutes for them to go, "Oh, we can win this game
now." Game.
Yeah, we can win this now. And then
I can relate.
You start to see people trying things. Well, if you try these things earlier, we can wrap up the game long time, son. We've got a game in midweek. Relax. But it don't happen. And the game goes on. And I was saying, because I don't know, Abdi had a little break from the game and he asked me how has it gone. I said, we started really well, but... we started to lose the rhythm of the game. We started to give Burnley more of the emphasis to come onto us. They weren't creating anything, which is why we had to give them the goal. But that's the issue, that we are giving them the goal and we're giving teams the onus. I know it's difficult to press for 90 minutes and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, 100%. But when you don't press for 90 minutes, there's something that you could do. I don't know if Arteta, if you're listening, it's called keeping the ball. I don't know, you need to pass it around the back or something. I don't know. But yeah, it's just long. And yeah, so Southampton, yeah?
No, but we just got to quickly talk about that. I know we mentioned it briefly, but mate, that was the most blatant handball I've ever seen
twice.
In my life, mate.
He handballed it twice.
The first one was close proximity.
I know.
The second one is that would be illegal in basketball. That's so much
handball. Yeah, no. I want to clarify actually. When I compared it to the Kante one earlier, I was no way disputing it. I think that was one of the clearest pens.
And then that's 10 minutes later, they give the worst decision. Like the ball clearly came off his shoulder. And then they give a penalty. So it's completely, inside and out, these referees are completely incompetent. And that's why when it comes to Euros now, Arsene Wenger said it 2 years ago, there won't be a single English referee at the World Cup. There won't be a single English referee in Euros because UEFA are watching, you know. You can't just continually be
of course they are. After you sounded like Big Brother.
Mike Dean, come to the diary, please.
All right, quick question. It's not about Arsenal, so you're good.
Praise the Lord.
Is it time then to start looking at bringing in foreign referees and referees who have proved themselves in other leagues and referees who have been to World Cups, European Championships, etc., and bringing them into the Premier League? Is it time?
Well, Mark, just to answer that question, sort of.
Yeah, this country's too xenophobic for that.
What I was going to say is that... we talked about it last week, and the FA, however you know corrupt they are, they're basically saying that hearing referee audio may be available for fans. Now that doesn't stop the referees being absolute trash, and the travesty of the decisions that they make. You know, it doesn't stop any of that, but it does give them some accountability, and hopefully we stop some of the ridiculous decisions that we're seeing. So they are looking to trial having the ref's audio being heard on TV when they're talking and that. So,
and listen, until something happens and they scrap the whole idea because they can't make it work and can't make it.
When a referee tells another player to F off.
All right, let's move on. Southampton, they finally win a game, but it's against Sheffield United. So you have to give them Sheffield United tax.
So they basically drew.
yeah. It doesn't count. It's annulled. But yeah.
So is that game over for Sheffield now?
It was game over in January.
When are they officially relegated then?
When it's mathematically.
As soon as it's mathematically done.
Yeah, but I mean that's what I'm asking. Like, when is it mathematically possible?
How many points they pick up and how many points other teams pick up?
I didn't do the accounting, my friend. I don't have one of those abacuses.
Good riddance.
But let's just say, I think Tanya said she's throwing a party for when that happens.
Yep.
But she never invited any of us, so
it's just her and a bunch of Sheffield Wednesday fans.
And Jamie Vardy.
It's only 12 points. I thought they were further away.
No, but that's because they beat someone midweek. I forgot who they beat midweek. Yeah.
You're saying it's only 12 points, bro. They've picked up 17 points this whole season.
How are they going to win four games, bro? You can't even trust them to win four games this in the 28 game period.
Yeah, that's true. So hopefully they beat Tottenham next time they play.
Nah.
Listen, she's the only one who can actually chat on this podcast because her team actually won. Let's move on. Shout out to Southampton. Oh, and what a goal!
Ings got injured, man.
What a goal from Che Adams, though.
Great goal.
Yeah, banging goal.
Great goal. It's time, actually, just before we move on, it is time probably for him to step up and start scoring slightly more regularly now, because I think he's a really good player, but without Danny Ings in that Southampton team, you think, where do the goals come from? So, Che Adams, it's your time, I think.
Yeah. Moving on to... See, Che, listen to the wise words of Mark.
Come on.
Let's move on to Villa versus Wolves. Abdi put 3 minutes, but it was a 0-0 draw. So I don't know what three minutes you are expecting to draw out of this game.
The game should have been condensed to 3 minutes anyway.
But 14 clean sheets for Emi Martinez.
That is mega impressive. And the whole back line, the whole Villa back line. Yeah. I think Matty Target has played in all of those 14, and obviously Martinez. It's really impressive.
I think England should call up Ezri Konsa because he's actually eligible for many other countries, like eligible for Portugal. Portugal would actually need a centre-back.
We're interested in him, apparently. And to be honest, I looked
He's a Tottenham fan, apparently. He's a Tottenham fan.
I don't know him, but actually, I've seen him play a couple of times now, and I'm like, you know what? I'd definitely take him.
The only reason he was out of the Villa team for a month or so earlier in the season is because he was injured. Other than that, he's been a mainstay in that back line. And an impressive back line, obviously, as
much improved.
14 clean sheets. Yep.
Much improved.
Definitely.
Let's move on to Brighton versus Leicester. The curious curse of Brighton. Creates.
Brighton make me sick, man.
They create.
They need to get
chances.
Relegated now. I can't lie. Just go.
I just want to say that I called it, so I don't even care. I want to
you see. Firstly, first and foremost, yeah. That this is the type of team, yeah, who at the end of the season they'll have chance created, top three in the league, goal scored, bottom. It's like the way they just. I watched a 4 minute video of all the chances they had this season on Twitter just like before the podcast, and I couldn't believe it. Like I remember. I always remember that game against Man United, like where they absolutely battered me, losing after full time. It's just like, they make me sick. And
what I want to see,
shout out to Amate for scoring on Ghana Independence Day.
I want to see Lallana.
Lallana, yeah.
You know, I was mixing his first name and his surname.
I like it.
Style that one off. Lallana's, what will be interesting to see if Brighton do get relegated would be to see players who have won the league one season and then got relegated the next season. I just think that would be quite interesting. I don't think there's a lot of players.
Yeah, he got that league title medal on clearing though.
Still got it.
Hey, it's what I aspire to, man. it's like Oxlade Chamberlain having Champions League medal, having not played the whole season.
And just a quick word on Leicester was like, we talked about them like having all these injuries, Barnes, Madison, Vardy not looking right, but. Their last two games, they've won. So, and that was
No, they didn't.
No.
They did draw against Burnley, but still, they beat
Brighton.
And they
lost to Arsenal the week before.
Yeah, let's not bring that up. They still picked up 4 points.
I'm not convinced. I'm just not convinced by them. I don't know what it is.
They're
and
third
I feel
place,
like...
Tony. You know, they get they've got the points.
That's what I'm saying.
I see them dropping out. I can't lie. I do actually.
Just as an FYI, I think their last three games of the season are City, Liverpool, and
final day, Tottenham at home.
Yeah.
I honestly think it will still be open going into those last three games. So
it's Chelsea, City, and Spurs. But
there you go.
And I put that into the group, Marcus.
Hey, let me steal your thunder in peace.
No. We don't let Abdi steal anyone's thunder. So
that Saturday was honestly it was made worse when I tuned into the Leicester and Brighton game and Tielemans is playing one of the through balls of the season. I just wanted to vomit as well.
he dropped that Brighton player. I've never seen it, but it was a good pass.
It was Lewis Dunk. What a slut, man. And the goalkeeper as well. The goalkeeper, he's like. They got rid of their goalkeeper, their main goalkeeper, Matt Ryan, sitting on the bench at Arsenal.
Sanchez.
And then they brought in this other guy, Sanchez. He made an amazing save from someone. I can't remember who it was. And then like, the two goals, really pretty much like the Iheanacho one, he almost like...
Oh, that was a goal, though.
As it was going in.
Yeah.
And then he fluffed at the corner for Amate's winner, so... Yeah,
it's not your day if Iheanacho scores. Let's move on.
Shut up.
The next game is like, come on, best game of the weekend, guys. West Brom versus Newcastle.
Hey, absolute belter of a game.
I don't even think we should dignify this game with analysis.
No, but what I will say is, last week we did. Well, I said that it was the biggest game of the season for both these two teams, and I said both of them had to avoid a draw, and we got a 0-0. Adi put 0 minutes on the agenda.
I think it's only right. Newcastle, for me, they're in trouble, mate.
They're
like,
dead,
we've said it already. They're so dead. They really are. I feel
Sam Allardyce will be celebrating after that result now, you know. he'll be down the chip shop. That's how he's celebrating.
It was
I'd actually be happy with West Brom going down, to be honest.
They've brought nothing to our league.
Yeah, same.
No, they haven't.
The next game, sorry Mark, is Liverpool versus Fulham.
Right, I want angry Mark today. The energy. Bring the anger now.
He looks like he's about to sign up.
I was checking the agenda because that one crept up on me. I didn't even do it next. So I'm weird.
So that is now six games in a row that Liverpool have lost at Anfield, which is a record and has never happened before.
That is mad.
It is mad.
Mark,
when you look at it, yeah, whatever you're going to say, yes, I'm very sad.
I wasn't going to say that.
I
was just going to say, like, I know before you came here and you said, you know, I can't be angry at these players, blah, blah, blah.
But, get my children.
But but now the mistakes are creeping in throughout the whole team because the goal came from Salah dwindling on the edge of his own box. So what do you, as a fan and a diehard Liverpool fan, you must look at this now and you must require some answers at least. You can't give them Premier League and Champions League tax for the rest of their careers. Nah. These men need to answer for things.
I admit I can't. They've definitely got Premier League and Champions League tax for this whole season. I can't even lie.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean I can't be unhappy with what I see on a pitch. And the simple answer here is that I was really unhappy for a number of reasons. A, I thought the lineup, look at our defence, genuinely championship standard minus Andy Robertson and Alisson.
So
as soon as I saw the team sheet, I felt bad straight away. And I knew, you know what, either Fulham are going to come and take a draw or we're going to lose again. And all they had to
The lineup, he had to make it. Thursday and you're playing against this.
We got Leipzig tomorrow, but it'll be today when people listen to this. We've got Leipzig on Wednesday. I completely understand the reason and the rationale behind making the changes. I don't know if I would have made so many at once. I don't know, because you look at this Fulham team there and you compare the form of the two teams. Fulham are the informed team. And Fulham are the team who are playing better football than us. Fulham are the team who have got the momentum. And Fulham actually have a bit of squad depth. It's not every day you see an 18th place team have the luxury of bringing Loftus-Cheek off their bench on the 70th minute.
It's true, you know.
Let's be honest.
That as well.
So for me, I don't think we should have gone into that game with the back line that we did. And I actually think it underestimated Fulham a little bit, perhaps.
Do you think so?
But
yeah, because earlier on, early in the game, like first half an hour, I think Maja had like four shots.
Yeah.
And it was just like, but he probably thought, like, I fancy myself against these two, Phillips and Williams.
I do.
With Nico Williams at right back.
I do think it was a game of two halves, though. Fulham came out flying. And I mean, you would imagine that from a team, you know, desperate to win. They came out flying. They had all the initiative. But then Liverpool did fight back in the second half. And you must say it was all Liverpool.
Listen, that is the story of the past 2 months. Listen, the game can be all Liverpool, but we can't put the ball in the back of the net. So I don't care if the game is all Liverpool or not.
And then when Areola...
The Areola save off of the Jota body.
Yeah.
But again, keepers are expected to make saves. And once they make the save, you then go and look for the next chance and the next opening and you make sure you score the next one. What we're not doing is showing enough urgency in our attacks. A year or two ago, we played some of the fastest paced football in Europe.
So mad.
And now I look at us play football and I just think, where has that whole vibe and energy gone? But listen, I've spoken about Liverpool in previous weeks and it's still the same. But Fulham...
I think there needs to be some serious question marks about some of the Liverpool players. Like, I know you say obviously they've still got the Premier League and Champions League type, but there's certain players I feel like you need to say thank you, but it's time to leave. And I'll be honest, from my point of view, obviously you probably think different. I know Liverpool fans probably think different. But there's certain guys, he's been an amazing servant in the time he's been there. But Milner, you've got to move him on now.
Yeah.
Keita, I feel like you've got to move him on.
Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Oxlade-Chamberlain, like, all right, you disagree with Keita, but like, I've not seen anything since he's been there. You know, I know he's been unlucky with injury, but, you know, I mean, how much longer are you going to wait for him? Oxlade-Chamberlain, again, another one who's been unlucky with injury, but still, like, I think he came on against Chelsea, was it? One of these two games I saw him, he had a little cameo. And most of the time as well, even through all these injuries and these players playing so many times, like, Wijnaldum played every minute almost.
Exactly. He's about that. So this is
time,
I was going to come with a response to you then. So let's say that we took your advice and we got rid of Milner and Keita and Ox, and we had the injuries that we had this season. Who then comes in? Milner's only starting because he has to. Literally, we're bare bones, minimum. So if we did get rid of him and we had a similar crisis, what then?
I don't even feel like this is a Milner issue. I feel like...
It's not. But I completely admit, a 35-year-old James Milner should not be starting for the Premier League champions. Yeah. And he shouldn't be a fixture in that starting 11.
Yeah.
But it shows where we are at the moment.
It's an off-the-bench thing with Milner. But I do agree with, like, Oxlade-Chamberlain. Origi has to go.
Origi. I mean,
even someone like Shaqiri.
I'm fed up with... Just about to say that. I'm fed up with Shaqiri now. Got a wand of a left foot. But other than that...
It doesn't offer much.
I don't think you can play in the Premier League if you're that small and that hench. It doesn't make sense. It's like a boulder. Like
Oh, you're so pink.
He looks like a fist.
Yeah, no,
this little mini refrigerator playing. I don't get it, man.
No, he's lucky he's got that left foot. But no, just to summarize for me, I said it earlier. I would take a ninth place finish right now. I don't want Europa League football next season.
So you don't want Europa.
Listen, I was looking at this earlier. So remember when Chelsea came 10th in, I think it was 2016.
Yeah.
They bounced back with no Europe and won the league the next season.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need a year to reset, and if that helps your chances in the league, then
Conte is the best. He's the best manager when it's just one game a week, when they've got European ties and all that stuff like that. But I do agree though. Like, with the thing is, we're discounting with Liverpool is that if they don't get to Europe next season, we forget about all the players that are going to come back.
Yeah,
like Van Dijk will be back
exactly.
Like, you know, having Fabinho centre mid. Consistently, Joe Gomez will be back. Henderson will be back in the team.
Yeah.
So, and then guys who have been there for a whole season will have acclimatized by then, like Thiago.
And then also, if you think about it as well, Liverpool are in a probably more privileged position than Arsenal in terms of financially, where they can probably take a year off. Where we've not had successful seasons for the last five or whatever, apart from an FA Cup here and there, we can't afford that. And that's where the issue lies.
Do you think Liverpool need a striker though?
Yeah, they need to invest
in that position.
I agree.
For sure.
Yeah. I think so. 2 points from me, just to not close this, but one is that we've still got the Champions League. So let's say we're half a foot into the quarterfinal, because no more than that, because 2-0 is a really precarious.
Yeah.
And given the form that we're in at the moment, we probably will concede. And if we concede first, then it will be very difficult for us not to concede the second, the way that we're playing at the moment. Second thing is that I will say it with chest right now on air. The airwaves are here. This can never be deleted, but we will be back next season. I promise you that. And I think there's a chance we can go and win the league next season. It's just this season for me is a write-off. Tan, you can disagree. I'm not throwing it out there as a fact. That's why I said I'm saying it with chest. This is me and my opinion. We'll be back next season.
You have to be careful, because you did say with chest that you'd win the league this season as well. So.
Oh, no, now it.
You put the words into my mouth. There was no chest there. All right, but, and who said Arsenal would be in the top four this season?
I don't know.
Calling me out.
That's fake news, man. I don't know what you're talking about.
Nah, but yeah.
That's speculation. Yeah. I don't want to ruin this.
Listen, I don't come on here to talk about Liverpool anymore. I just come on here some vibes and enjoy it.
Vibes.
Wow.
But congrats. You know, we have to congratulate Fulham for their...
Oh, that centre-back, Anderson. What a performance.
Unreal. That block.
That block right at the end as well. That's probably... And now they're level points with Brighton as well. So
yeah.
It's unbelievable. Yes. Where
I remember... like 3 or 4 weeks ago, we were talking about Newcastle being dragged into the relegation battle, and we were talking about Fulham, and then Abdi was like, "Yeah, but where Fulham going to get the points from?" They've responded, Abdi.
Big up, Scott.
Abdi, sit down. Abdi, sit down and take. No, I'm joking. What?
No one here expects him to go with Liverpool. And
no, absolutely not. But credit to Fulham and Scott Parker.
And they bloody should have got a point midweek as well. That stupid referee just allowed the goal.
Yeah.
I
got a quick question for you. let's say Fulham survive and they stay in the Prem, which I really want them to.
Yeah.
Is Scott Parker in the running for Manager of the Year?
Ooh.
I don't think we should be rewarding just surviving.
No.
And to be fair, of all the promoted teams, they probably got backed the most in terms of finance.
The only thing I will say...
No, he deserves credit, though.
I do think context needs to be given. Like, you can't just say, just surviving. Scott Parker is a new manager. This is his second or third season, if I'm not mistaken. He like, the other seasons he spent in the Championship, this is his first time in the Prem. He took everything on board in terms of, like, their poor form early in the season, and he's turned it around. Him and this group of players, they've made some signings in January, blah, blah, but he's managed to turn the whole thing around. And if they do survive, you have to say he's done a fantastic job.
I think I'll probably be in the running, but I think... Guardiola's manager this season.
I'm not saying for manager of the season, but I'm saying he has to be given credit for the work that he's done.
Credit. I like the fact that he noticed his team was rubbish on the opening day, and then he went and bought a lot of really, really good African players.
Someone said Scott Parker's trying to win the AFCON in the Prem. All right, let's move on. Happy Tanya. Spurs won again.
All right, guys, I'm logging out for this.
No, you stay right here, because I'm telling you, Happy Tans is back.
Kane has found a new best friend. He's discarded Son and he's moved on to Bale. And the good times keep rolling for Spurs, unfortunately.
Look. Right, I'm going to come with a lot of gas here, because I think it's right. It's only right.
Hey, Mark, how do we mute Tanya on my computer?
I'm sorry, I'm older. Nah, do you know what? I couldn't be more happier with the way we've been performing recently. You know, 100 goals this season, which, as Jose Mourinho pointed out, it ain't bad for a negative manager. 100 goals this season we've scored.
In all comps.
So
you're including wins against, like, Marine and all that.
Anyway, let me actually, you know, just talk about the game. So for those that didn't watch the game, we ended up beating Crystal Palace 4-1. I'm going to keep it real. The first half, I wasn't impressed. I mean, we all saw on Twitter, I felt that we were a bit too casual on the ball for me. And although we did get the early goal, brilliant assist by Kane. That was all Moura, by the way, who I have to say, he's thriving in that number 10 position at the moment. And obviously, Bale scored again. I'm loving the link up between these two. But I saw that goal coming from Crystal Palace, because, again, it just seems like... It's kind of like what you were saying, Junior, about Arsenal. I feel like with us, we don't keep up that momentum in games. We just almost score, get a bit complacent, and we just think every game's going to be a walk in the park and we shouldn't be threatening, when I just think that's the wrong mentality to have. Regardless of Crystal Palace not being a better team than us, they still pose a threat. And my concern was that, obviously, we conceded the goal. Sanchez ball watching yet again. Doherty, I think, should have closed a player down as well. I was fearful that Zaha was going to come on that second half. So I was expecting the worst, because I've seen games like this so many times. We score, we end up conceding, and then, you know, the rest is history. We end up losing the game. But the second half, I don't know what Jose Mourinho did. Yeah, he obviously played my rant to the players at half time. And boy, did we respond. And can I just talk about my striker, Harry Kane? Yeah. I'm telling you now, right, no other striker in world football can chat to him other than Lewandowski. I'm going to just keep it real. The player...
Erling Haaland.
Listen, Haaland's a great player. He's a great player, and Mbappe, but listen, Harry Kane for me...
74 goals in 70 games is incredible.
Yeah, I know. I'm not discrediting them. From a 19-year-old. I'm not, but I'm just saying I put Kane in that bracket with the likes of Lewandowski.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, he's...
Kane makes me sick. He is unbelievable, man.
Unbelievable. Like, that game itself, like, two assists, two goals, and that first goal, did you not see that goal?
Yeah, that was a banger.
Absolutely mental, and...
He can literally hit the target from anywhere on the pitch, even like, from behind, like shooting the other direction. The guy's got he's got dynamite on his feet.
I've got to give it to Jose Mourinho, because in that Spurs documentary, they sat down together and he said, "I'm going to make you explode." And you have to be real, 13 assists, 16 goals this season. That's absolutely astronomical.
Can I just disagree real quickly? I disagree. Harry Kane was world-class from when Poch brought him in the team. We're getting more of his goal. We're getting more of his assists now because he's got goal threats either side of him as well.
Oh, he's just unbelievable.
When Poch was about, he was the main source of goals. Like, his main job was to score goals. Now he's more of a little bit more of a facilitator because they play a bit more different. But I can't say that Mourinho is the one who's taken him to another level.
I think he deserves credit.
He was at that level. What makes him world class is because he's been consistently world class for about 6 years now, and that was from Poch. I think he was at his peak. Was when he was under Poch, and he's just like consistent now. He's still.
I feel so lucky to have him.
I just want to agree with Tanya actually, because you talk about he under Poch, he was the guy to get all the goals, and he was like 25 plus goals every season, that kind of thing. But under Mourinho, he's asked to play this more, or maybe not asked to, but given the freedom to play a deeper role. Which has seen his passing be highlighted a lot more. Jamie Carragher said it on MNF like a few months ago now, that Harry Kane has always had these passes in his locker. I think Tanya said it a couple of minutes ago. So he's always had it in his locker, but Mourinho has allowed him to exhibit that and show that. And now he is. He's getting the goals still. And that third goal, like Tanya said, was bloody incredible. It looked like a rocket just like...
Yeah, man.
Like a homing rocket.
Into
like
a far corner. Yeah.
And then he's getting the assists as well. He's the top assister in the league. So,
and him and Son have broken Alan Shearer's record now. Alan and Shearer and Sutton broken a record, 14 Premier League goals, which is just insane. And I have to talk about Gareth Bale as well. You know, I wrote him off. I said I'll take everything he does with a pinch of salt, but I keep saying it. I think he is back. I genuinely think he's back. And Graham Soonish...
Typical for him to be back a week before the North London Derby, man.
Hang on. Graham Soonish, this guy, him and Roy Keane, right? I don't know who they think they are. They're on some Piers Morgan type shit, they're negative vibes. I can't stand them both. Like, him saying... Because obviously, Bell after the interview was saying, you know, I'm not 21 anymore, which rightly so, he's not. But he hasn't performed to the level that we expected. But at the same time, you do have to acknowledge the fact that he isn't that young player of how many years ago. He's going to have to adapt his game. He's not going to be as quick. And for my man to say, "Oh, but I played my best football in my 30s," I'm thinking, bruv, who is Graham Souness? Like, I've not even heard of this guy. I just know him from Sky. Do you know what I mean? Acting like he's some legend. But anyway,
I got to say, that's so false what you've just said, because he's a multiple league winner, European Cup winner.
I don't care.
Football wasn't invented in the 2000s.
He is an absolute hater. I don't like him. And I didn't like what you were saying about Gareth Bale. This whole thing of, he's scoring goals against Wolfsburg and all of this. But this is the problem. Like, he's not had the opportunity. And it's not his fault that the opportunities he has been given, it's against weak opposition. That's just how the cookies crumbled for him this season. He is now proving that he can score goals. He's taking up different positions on the pitch. He's assisting. Like, what more can the guy do? I just feel banging on about it.
The test for him is, as Abdi mentioned, it's not a test, but the he can really lay down a mark in the North London derby.
It's not a test, it's Arsenal.
Listen.
I meant the test.
Listen.
Because Tanya's
saying gonna
that.
He's going to score.
Yeah.
And he's going to do the celebration, I can see it.
Just for the listeners, Tanya is doing the heart celebration, even though it doesn't look like a heart.
Welsh Mafia, baby! Welsh Mafia!
Junior looks like he's in the middle of a nightmare.
Listen, I think football should end today. It was nice knowing you guys. And
yeah, I was gonna say earlier on, yeah, like not only do I want the season to be null and void, I want this podcast to be null and void.
Allow us, man. We could talk about anything else, man. Come on. Let's move on though. Shout out to you, Tanya.
I'm not even finished. I had so much more to say. I want to talk about Reguilon. Even Doherty played decent.
Let's move on.
We've heard it all. West Ham versus Leeds. West Ham flying high still. And Jesse Lingard back in the England picture, perhaps, with his performances.
Based on his performances, you can't say he's not in the running, you know?
And with the injuries
It's such a weird one because I don't think he should be in the running, but as you say, based on performances, he should be. But then it's who? Like, who possibly drops out for Jesse Lingard?
Yeah, I mean,
he's stacked in that area.
We have to see if the injuries to Madison and, well, I think Grealish is okay, but to Madison.
Yeah. So is Madison. Madison's a couple of weeks away from being fit.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
But yeah, West Ham keep on climbing. Doing their bits.
West Ham are getting on my nerves, you know. They just keep winning. Just lose, man. Lose. They're getting on my nerves.
We're talking about all the guys who have been really good for West Ham as well, like Suchek, Rice, Antonio, and obviously Jesse Lingard now. But Soufal has been good as well. But I think massive credit to Craig Dawson, brother. Yeah. I never saw this.
Yes.
He's like performing like one of the top centre-backs in the league. And I've heard people mentioning him as in the England running as well.
That's crazy.
Which, like, again, like, you wouldn't think he wouldn't be a glamorous choice as well. And then if he's coming up against some of the, you know, top forwards in European football, it might be long for him, you know. But like I said, it's the same thing with Jesse Lingard. Based on performances, he's one of the biggest threats in attacking set pieces in the Premier League. Like, that guy, he finishes like a striker.
But Abdi, just on Craig Dawson quickly before we move on. You say that him coming up, you know, at the Euros against top strikers in world football, he might be in European football next season, and we might just see exactly.
Oh no, they're not.
No, because they could still finish in Europa.
Make Europa League, yeah, genuinely.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Relax.
Take time, Danny. They're above you.
They just wind me up. Like, they actually wind me up.
And on that note, let's talk about another team that winds us all up. Chelsea.
Yes.
Win again.
Love Chelsea. Love it.
Everton, this team, yeah, they make it. They make my blood boil because they make it so easy for certain teams. They made it so easy for Chelsea. They played open and they offered very little, and it just drives me insane that you could play this well, like this badly against Chelsea, but then you come against Arsenal and these men just turn into flipping prime Barcelona.
What drives me mad about Chelsea, yeah, is that going behind against them, the game is finished. You have no chance. They'll suffocate you. They have good ball retention in the midfield. They play a back three and their front three will press. So it's impossible to do anything once you go behind. As we saw against Liverpool couldn't do anything like after Chelsea went ahead. It's the only way you're going to... Like, I'm scared that Chelsea won't lose another game for the rest of the season. It's just...
They
went to the La Liga leaders. And I know, obviously, they were negative as well, but they weren't under threat at all in the game for me. And then you just watch, like, Tuchel now. Earlier on here, when you guys were talking about Leicester, I said I don't think Leicester are going to stay in that position because I'm going to make a shout now. I think Chelsea are finishing second.
Same. I agree with that.
They're only 4 points behind Man United in second.
Yeah. Okay.
And they just look imperious right now, like the way they shaded. But the one solace is Timo Werner is still stinking it out. So, I mean, it's good for the agenda, you know.
And Havertz had to play. But yeah, no, I do agree with you, Abdi. I don't know about not losing again this season. I do think they'll be found out in certain areas, like because they are so negative. It would be good to see them go behind to see how they react. But yeah, I mean, it's
long.
I don't really want to talk about Chelsea,
and it makes me sick as well.
And I hate Everton for not turning up yesterday. So let's move on.
They deserve the win, though. To be fair,
yeah, Chelsea
they
did.
Most games they've played, they've deserved the win because, as Abdi said, they suffocate.
But Tuchel does deserve a lot of credit. Like players like Alonso and Christensen playing in the back three, like players that I kind of felt were. I mean, Alonso's always been decent, but Christensen, players like that. you know, he's getting the best out of his players.
Excellent, like, he's been really good recently.
But
and Alonso as well. Who saw it? I thought Alonso was done out
no,
here.
But
like,
we,
Lampard banished him.
But we have seen Alonso under Conte in a back three playing really well, yeah. And Christensen playing in a back three. There's more protection for his idiocy. So, but let's move on.
Jorginho was good as well. To be fair, Jorginho.
I mean, now Jorginho's in a system where he doesn't have to run. So yeah,
yeah.
shout out to Kante because he was amazing against Liverpool.
Yeah. See, Kante does all the running, so Jorginho doesn't have to. Jorginho literally just stands there and he just gets the ball and he passes it and he does that.
Fair,
he does that little jog. But let's move on.
To be fair, we haven't seen Kante and Jorginho that much together.
Abdi, let's move on, please. Okay.
We haven't got any more games to talk about.
Yeah, I know, but we do have to wrap this thing up. Man of the week, I'm going to start with Mark only because I want to.
Right. I thought you was about to say your nomination. I'm going to start with. I think I'm going to give it to... He wasn't necessarily the best player on the pitch, but he's been consistent. I think him and Soyacek have started every single league game for West Ham this season, which in itself is impressive. And he's just been one of the key components of that West Ham team being where they are now. So I'm going to give it to Declan Rice this week.
Cool.
Nice.
Abdi?
I am going to give it to Steven Gerrard. Rangers won the title, first time in 10 years.
Big up.
They won
big
it without
up.
That. Well, this is the earliest time anyone's ever won it since like 100 years ago. And then, and they're just
55 league
as well. And now, and also, they're like a league, they're a threat in Europe now as well. Yeah. So, Steven Gerrard.
Tanya?
Harry Kane. Simple. 2 goals, 2 assists in one game. Goal off top scorer, 13 assists. It's Harry Kane. Simple as.
Okay. I'm going to give it to Areola for his performance.
Yeah.
But not just the performances, the performance at the weekend. He has been very consistent for Fulham. And a big reason why their form has turned around. And we probably should have given it to a Man United player as well, but I don't care. I hate United.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Cool. Does anybody have anything else before we depart? All right, then.
I'm silent.
So we're now going to go over to Abdi and his little poem.
No, I'm not doing it. Bye. I'm not doing it. I fluff it every week.
Abdi, your little poem.
Right, thanks for tuning in. See you later. Bye.
Anyway, yeah.
Oh, but he's actually gone.
Oh, he actually left.
So rude.
Yeah, we'll be back next week. Follow us. Tell your friends. Peace.
Peace. Take care, guys. Sports Social Podcast Network.